Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hi, fans. I have another registered dietitian here as a guest with me today, which is always fun to talk to another dietitian. So I'm here with Stevie Lynn Smith. She is a sports dietitian and avid endurance athlete. Her mission is to help educate and coach athletes on how to fuel their goals and mindset while not sacrificing their health or happiness. As a board-certified specialist in sports nutrition, Stevie Lynn has helped hundreds of athletes and active individuals fuel to improve their performance, energy levels, and recovery without feelings of guilt or restriction. When Stevie's not swimming, biking, or running herself, you'll find her in the kitchen working on a new recipe or out on the trails with her dog. So I think with her bio, if you've been a listener of this podcast for a while, you can see why I'm really excited to talk to Stevie, because she shares a lot of philosophies and interests as I do. So Stevie, welcome to the Female Athlete Nutrition Podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah. No, I really love talking to other dietitians that I know are kind of in line with me. At the same time, we can learn from each other because we do different things and you're a different person, obviously. So
yeah, absolutely. No, I love it too. I just did a long run yesterday with a sports dietitian, you know, in my area too. And it's the best to connect.
Yeah. And remind me, where is your area right now?
Oh yeah. So I'm located in Buffalo, New York.
Yes. Yes. I did know that. Awesome. So Stevie, what got you into nutrition in the first place? How did your career end up here?
Yeah. So it was a little bit of a windy road, which I feel like a lot of dietitians don't always take that straight path to becoming a dietitian. So I started at SUNY Brockport, which is a state college up in Western New York. And I actually started with a phys ed degree. Oh. And I felt like the time I was in college, everybody was going to school to be a phys ed teacher. And basically I went to Brockport because I signed on with the lacrosse team there. So I was a lacrosse goalie, Division III school. I was just very excited I fell in love with lacrosse. I picked up a stick for the first time halfway through my freshman year of high school and was captain of varsity by sophomore year. And I loved it. I was a goalie.
Yeah.
Mentioned that slightly, a little bit more of an interesting position. And I think it explains a lot about me. But
get a lot of fast balls thrown at you all the time.
Yes, a very high tolerance for pain, which really translated into racing Ironman triathlons, but a lot of those endurance races. But so I went to school basically to play lacrosse first and then go to school second. And within that, I took a public health class and followed that kind of as a minor, which led me to nutrition. And it was maybe one of the first times. I never super struggled in school, but math was always really hard. But I was always, you know, an A, high B student in every subject. But that nutrition class, I was like, this just clicks. And I'm very interested to learn more. And it was just kind of like your basic nutrition. And my lacrosse experience in college was very different than it was in high school. And it was just like a different team, different coaches, no bad words to say. It was just different. So I started looking into, how do I become a registered dietitian? You know, how do I get my degree in this? So it wound me back up in Buffalo at SUNY Buffalo State, where I entered what was formerly known as the coordinated program in dietetics. So didn't realize that it would kind of restart the clock on undergrad. So I
yeah.
yeah, transferred in after 2 years at Brockport. So I always like to joke that my undergraduate degree took 6 years to get, but I was able to also get my dietetic internship done, you know, in those 4 years as well, which is kind of that joy of the coordinated program, but doing all of the coursework and the clinical supervised practice at the same time was kind of another challenge, circling back to the lacrosse goalie doing great hard things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, this is the struggle actually for people who are interested in becoming dietitians. You have to decide on the dietetics track. Like if you're studying biology or anatomy or just like really similar things, even if you're studying nutrition, that can be different than being on the dietetics track. And then you have to like, yeah, it's a little frustrating actually.
It was the chemistry sequences that set me back to make me a freshman again. But I mean, no regrets. I loved it. So I got my BS in dietetics and nutrition from SUNY Buffalo State. And honestly, I didn't have like any high hopes or dreams of like being a sports dietitian or working with athletes. I just loved learning about it, and helping people has always been really important for me. So unlike a lot of people who I feel like are anti-clinical right now, I went right into clinical and worked as a clinical dietitian in Washington, D.C. for 6 years. And I mean, it was hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't obviously the right thing for me, but I learned so, so much, not just about nutrition, but also about life from a very kind of underserved patient population that I served down in Washington, D.C., and a number of different kind of health conditions from ALS to TBIs to MS, home care. So it was a great professional, but also life learning experience for me. And it was amazing. But I love how, you know, I'm sure you can relate being a dietitian. There's so many doors you can open that it's just like, you know, if you work hard and show up every day in some way, that you'll get to where you want to be. It's important to you.
You know, my journey started in clinical too. I was only a clinical dietitian for a year, and mostly because that's where the job opportunities were. But even though I knew I didn't want to keep doing that, I look back on it now being so grateful because, like you said, I think just a lot of life experiences as a dietitian, you need to know the medical side of things. And so you get thrown into it day in and day out with a clinical job versus now in my own practice, like I only see those clinical things from time to time. And when I do, I'm always like, oh, I need to pull out my books again. I need to call a friend who's, you know, who's been doing this more, because you get out of touch with it. But I'm so thankful that I had at least that year. But I'm interested to hear your opinions, if you want to expand on it, on what you just said of like, it's like people aren't into clinical anymore, or just what did you kind of mean by that? If you don't mind.
Oh yeah, no, I'm happy to share my opinion about that. I see a lot, like I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook anymore, but I'm in some like dietitian groups and everybody's like, oh, my clinical time was such a waste of time. Like don't even bother, just like go right into private practice, I'm not saying that's not the right move for some people. And a lot of people, like some people really thrive and they don't need that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like, I'm going to be 100% honest. I don't like the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
I'll be 100% honest. I'm not a member anymore. I ended my membership a couple of years ago because I wasn't the biggest fan and I didn't see what good they were doing me in my practice. I wasn't getting anything out of it. So I stopped being a member.
Exactly. Yeah. I was in it like when work paid for it. And then briefly when I went back to grad school and like was kind of thinking about private practice sports nutrition, but only for the dietetic practice groups. But I remember even in the sports nutrition group, I like, oh, there's a mentor program. I reached out to somebody and just like never heard back. And I was like, okay, like, you know, fine. But a lot of like the positions that they put out and some of the information they put out, I really don't agree with it, but I like people are taking that to an extreme and being like, oh, well, the academy is awful, so clinical is awful, and you're not going to learn anything useful. I learned a lot. I remember my first couple of weeks, I was like, what did I just do the last 4 years? I mean, that was a little dramatic, but
it's true.
It's like you can only replicate super sick patients so well in the internship. You know, it's just, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the patient population in DC was very different, but I remember getting some patients and I was like, okay, but they have all this going on. So how am I going to adjust their tube feeding? And, you know,
I definitely agree with you. And this is just an observation. I don't have any proof, but as an observation, since I'm in my own business now, it might just be my bubble, but like I'm seeing so many people come straight out of undergrad or out of grad school or right out of their internship, like wanting to start their own practice. And trust me, I'm all for that because I love my business and what I do. And like, I do want to encourage and motivate other people too, but I did that after almost a decade of work experiences in different populations and stuff. And it is, I think, in the clinical setting, at least, you know, the starting salary for a dietitian is not, it's not very good. Obviously it varies where in the country you're living, but after, and cause now is it official that you need a master's degree now to be a dietitian?
2024, I believe.
2024. Okay. Like you and me have it anyways. But yeah, so coming up, it's like you need this extra schooling with the internship. And then by 2024, you're going to need the master's and the starting salary for a clinical job is really not reflective of this at all. So that's a big problem. And I think that's why so many people are like, don't bother with clinical, go for these other jobs, start your own business where you can charge your own price. And it's like, I don't know. I really think those you need work experiences. And from a hospital, it really is good. Like it's medical nutrition.
It helps. Like also, I mean, you're so young too. It helps you learn how to work with people and educate people and those interactions and counsel and coach. And, you know, cause a lot of it is counseling too, that you're working with people that are challenging, that are at of all ranges of learning levels. You know, there's sometimes where I was teaching at a third grade level to an adult. So it just helps you to learn how to engage with people that aren't usually within your bubble too. That's important.
And a lot more like understanding and sympathy for people's situations and maybe what, you know, maybe whether it's what got them sick in the first place. Like I'll never forget some of my first experiences as a clinical dietitian, because I was also in a relatively, like I grew up in Massachusetts and then my clinical job was in Tallahassee, Florida. And so the demographic there was just different than what I grew up around. And, you know, I'll never forget going into somebody who was newly diagnosed with diabetes and trying to educate them on carbohydrates. And like their diet was just sweet tea and fried chicken and whatever they could find. Oh my gosh, Stevie, this memory is hitting me of somebody who like lived, because Tallahassee is a city, but surrounding it's really rural. And like this person shopped at the Dollar General. Like that's where they did their grocery shopping. They didn't even, because going to a grocery store was like way too far away. So they grocery shopped at a Dollar General. And it's like, you kind of need those experiences to help you have understanding for everybody's unique food situation, what got them into that situation in the first place, and how to really help them. It's like, so am I going to tell this person to start eating quinoa? No. Right. I'm going to try and educate them on, you know, reading a label on their frozen food items.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Where I did home care in DC, there were a lot of food deserts and it was the same thing. And it's just like, okay, you know, and then all the other myriad of factors working against them. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what eventually got you, because you're an athlete yourself, you were interested in physical education stuff, but then you really liked this whole nutrition thing, did clinical, really valued that. So what brought you back to sports nutrition and getting into that field?
Yeah. So I would say it just kind of happened. Other people might say differently that I worked really hard, but
fair.
Like I said, I never really was like gung ho. Okay, this is it. Like I need to do whatever and connect with whoever to get to being a sports dietitian. So when I was working in DC, I started working a couple other contract jobs. So I had two jobs kind of in the sports nutrition space. And because at that time I did my first full Ironman triathlon in 2012. So my senior year of dietitian school, as I call it,
Wow.
Yes. Did my first full Ironman in Lake Placid, New York, and it was awesome. It was the best day ever. And so that was 2012. So from 2012 to 2019, I did 10 full Ironman distance triathlons, plus so many half Ironman distance triathlons. I think one year I did like 3 marathons in a year.
Wow.
50-mile ultra, long distance open water swimming. Basically, I created this community around me in DC that were my friends, but they also love doing all of this stuff. So somebody would just send out an email like, hey, who wants to go to New Orleans? We can run a half marathon on Sunday and then hang out for a couple of days. Or, you know, somebody sign up for this swim with me. Or, you know, I'll never forget, you know, some of those friend race vacations. So it just kind of became ingrained in me. And then as I was doing it, like I always think back to my first Ironman and I was like, obviously I ate and like drank sports drink and like fueled myself. But I sometimes look back and I was like, oh, wow, I kind of got lucky. Like, was I eating like regular Clif bars? all I think about now is the fiber. I was like, how did I manage that for 12 hours? But
yeah,
so it just kind of like went hand in hand. As I was doing more of these races, I was also finding ways to fuel myself better.
Better. Yeah.
And I guess more educated would be the correct approach, because, you know, within school, we didn't have a sports nutrition class. So I was doing more reading and learning on my own and practicing more things. And then it just kind of became a side hustle. And then I got super burnout working at the VA hospital, loved DC, but I was like, okay, kind of at that one of those points where I was like, okay, I wasn't even 30 yet, but like almost 30, and I'm going to be miserable at my desk for 40 hours a week, or am I going to take a chance? You know, I don't have a husband or a kid. Like, I can go back and get my master's degree and work some contract work and kind of take a leap. I wasn't really sure where I was jumping. Like, I wasn't even dead set on owning my own business at that point. My mom's like, oh yeah, you're going to have your own business. I was like, okay, lady, whatever you say.
Isn't it funny how, yeah, people who know you and love you can know exactly what you're going to do before you even know it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was in 2017. And I was like, okay, mom, cool. Thumbs up. So in 2018, I moved back to Buffalo because love DC, but it's very expensive and not the city to try and, you know, take this leap financially. So Buffalo is home. So we wound up back here. And that was a long answer to your short question.
No, well, yeah. So all, you know, you just started getting into, from after lacrosse, you just really fell in love with these endurance sports and went right into Ironmans, which is, you know, a big jump, very, very impressive. And so, yeah, learning through practice of like, you know, what works for you and what doesn't work for you fueling wise.
Yeah. I always think back to those early days when I think back to now and where sports nutrition was and, you know, where it is now. And I just sometimes laugh, right? Because the woman who kind of took me under her wing, love her, Heather, she's great. For my first Ironman, she's like, you're going to drink Gatorade and you're going to like it. You know, there was none of this like super fuel and Morton. And I'm not saying that there's anything bad, that these are all options, but it was just like, okay, Power Bar Perform is the sports drink that's on course and I'm going to practice with it and like learn how to drink it. Don't like it, but.
Yeah, you just went with, yeah, it was like Gatorade, Power Bar, Gooze.
Goo. I think that was it. Yeah.
Clif bars, as you've already mentioned. Yeah.
Like fruit strips, like the fruit strips you can buy at the grocery store too, like rotating them in. Oh my God. And they didn't have like the gear that they used to. So I shoved it all into my sports bra and like, I just didn't. And I, at the shower after that Ironman, I had so many like chafes and cuts from all the wrappers.
From all your goo wrappers stuffed in your sports bra. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I still sometimes do that because I don't really like wearing the belts. So I still just shove it down my sports bra.
They got sports bras with pockets now.
Oh, I've been out of the game too long then. I didn't even know that.
I'll send you some links. They're really good. but yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. And I look at my old gear and I was like, oh man, that's your faux pas.
Yeah. So I think this is where with your, like, you know, I'm a runner myself and just a couple of marathons. But I think really once you start doing Ironmans and stuff and you're navigating the fueling for a full day event and on different apparatuses, different events all in one and stuff, that's where you really do have to get super creative with your fueling strategy. So it's interesting to hear you say like now there's so many more options, right? And it's not that one's better than the other. It's just you really have to figure out what works for you. And there's sometimes, I don't know, it's tough though, Stevie, because it's like, it's great to have options, but it also confuses the consumer.
Oh yeah. Very, very confused consumers all the time, but that's why we're here to help, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's just one of those things where I tell my clients, like, I won't force you to use X product or Y product, right? I try to keep a very open mind, you know, kind of if we're checking my boxes, probably the same boxes as yours, fluids. Are we meeting fluid needs, carbohydrate needs, sodium needs? And then we can go from there. Those are the top three and look at, hey, where are we getting our carbohydrates from, right? Long course, we want those multiple transportable carbohydrate sources throughout the day. Do we need, is it long enough that we need a little protein thrown in there, right? You know, and then kind of starting laying the groundwork, just kind of basic fueling and then really fine tooling from there. Cause most people come to me and they're like, oh, well, I have one client. I love him. He's my friend. I've known him forever since high school. And he's like, oh, but I can run 15 miles without eating anything. And I was like, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly.
So, yep. You know, people who aren't used to fueling, it's really starting with, okay, like, let's just start with some basic guidelines, start having you get used to doing this, and then we'll get like really hyper-focused rather than worrying about like what our custom infinite formula is going to be. I was like, okay, let's rewind a little bit here.
I've gone on that website a couple times to help out a couple of my clients, and it is like kind of oof to create a whole custom formula. And I've actually, and I don't know if you have a different opinion on this, but for me, I've just said, like, I think we can find other products instead of trying to create it custom ourselves. There's other products that are meeting what we need. So I'm not speaking poorly of that. That's just been my conclusion with the handful of clients that have come my way with it.
100%. And then there's the people who are like, okay, but it's going to take me this long to do my Ironman bike. And, you know, like some of the non-negotiable stuff is like, okay, you either need to stop and mix your bottles at, oh, they renamed it. I don't remember what they renamed it, but it was formerly known as Special Needs Stop, which is halfway through the bike. And there's one halfway through the run. I know they named it something more politically correct. So I apologize that I don't know the PC name.
That's okay.
Because I'm retired from Ironman.
We'll educate ourselves on it after.
Yes, yes. I have to go look that up. But I am very glad that they changed it because I was always like, don't know if I love that name. Like,
it was just a if you have a need that you need to stop midway through the course.
Yes. And you get your own bag for it.
Okay.
That you can add, like, some people put other bottles of sports drink that they have pre-mixed if they're not going to take what's on course. Or like some people put a fresh pair of sneakers for the run course bag.
Yeah.
There's lots of things you can do with it. But you know, if people are hard no on drinking the on-course sports drink, I'm like, all right, well, then you're just going to have to stop because you can't carry enough fluids for a full Ironman on your bike. I don't care how many bottle cages you have. So there are certain non-negotiables, but we make it work.
Hey guys, I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment because I want to let you know about an amazing discount for an awesome company that I partner with, Inside Tracker. In fact, in this episode, we talk about blood biomarkers, which is part of what Inside Tracker does and why I want to tell you about them. They help you optimize your body using science and technology to deliver ultra-personalized guidance. They use cutting-edge algorithmic engines to analyze your blood, DNA, lifestyle, and workout habits, and it's all available to you right now. You can hop online and order your plan and use the code RISEUPNUTRITION. One word, all capital letters, for a whopping 25% off. Seriously, that is a good savings, 25% off. And I hope you know that I don't advertise for too many products on this podcast because I really value personalized and individualized nutrition and care, but that's exactly why I really value Inside Tracker. It helps put health into your own hands and you do get individualized results. It's based on your blood work. I use Inside Tracker myself. I use it on many of my clients. And if you use the code RISEUPNUTRITION for your Inside Tracker order, regardless of being a personal client or not, then I'm always happy to consult with you via email if you need more nutrition support. So head to InsideTracker.com to learn more. Use the code RISEUPNUTRITION. More details in the show notes. Get that 25% off amazing discount. And let's get back to the episode and this awesome conversation.
I want to touch back on Inside Tracker later because you work as a dietitian for Inside Tracker. But in part of this, to kind of be our segue, is that you recently worked with Shalane Flanagan as she did her 6 marathons in 6 weeks. So I'm sure there was a lot of helping her out with these kind of fueling tactics for that. I don't know how much you can share as she's, you know, one of your clients and everything, but can you just tell us some of your experiences and what were some of like the fueling priorities or things that you and her worked on as she took on this huge challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. So Shalane was really, really awesome to work with and like what an undertaking for sure. But I was very excited that we did this because just looking at her data over the 6 weeks from all 6 marathons, I mean, probably the geek in me a little bit, but it was so interesting to see just like how such a well-trained athlete responded and those small changes that we made really made a big difference. And, you know, she's pretty open. You know, we shared all of her kind of results in an article and on social media. So she's totally cool talking about her blood biomarkers and everything, just that nice little disclaimer there. So, you know, some of the big things that we saw were changes in biomarkers related to muscle breakdown, muscle damage. And of course, we would expect to see some of that inflammation as well. So, you know, it was more about, okay, what can we do in between the marathons, right after the marathons, to really promote, you know, recovery, rehydration, refueling versus the like actual in race fueling plan, right? She kind of had that down. So it wasn't.
She's experienced. She has that down.
Yeah. Exactly. So a number of the actions were, you know, just looking at, you know, especially I'm thinking like what comes to mind is the Boston, Chicago kind of back to back marathons that we saw there with travel in between. That was really just kind of business refueling, right? You know, she had snacks, hydration from that finish line in the car to the airport to Boston, like really prioritizing that right away. After London and Berlin were kind of a big wake up call for her that like, okay, maybe some of the things I was doing before worked after one marathon, right? Which she was used to racing. But then when you're adding, you know, this cumulative fatigue, this cumulative stress, she's like, oh, okay, like I just really need to fine tune and focus some of these actions, you know, right after my workouts or these races, but also in between. After Berlin and London, her inflammation went up pretty high. Her cortisol, stress hormone, was still, you know, kind of within our optimized zones, but she really, really took this as her wake up call, like I mentioned.
And so this was marathon number 3 and 4, London.
Marathon 1 and 2.
Oh, that was 1 and 2.
First. Yep. So after that, she was like, okay, if I'm going to be going into Chicago, Boston back to back, especially like I really need to, you know, get these things fine tuned. It was also, of course, with the help with her physical therapist and her team at Nike. So her test after Chicago, Boston. So I aimed to schedule her test about 3 days post race so we could see those acute changes in some of those biomarkers after each race. And her biomarkers related to like that muscle health, muscle breakdown they actually went down compared to her test after London and Berlin. Like they saw a pretty big drop. Her hsCRP, the marker of inflammation, also dropped like almost twofold. It went from 2.8 to 1.3.
Wow.
And that, and you would think in that 3-day window post back-to-back marathon, but it was just one of those testaments to her really kind of having that wake up call and being like, okay, like I really need to focus on adding in, you know, not just more food, but also the right things in between these.
Yeah. Right, what were some of the changes that she made, like to really help with her recovery and bring that cortisol and inflammation down?
Yeah. So one of the big things, as I kind of mentioned, was really being dialed in with meal and snack timing around her workouts. You know, I mean, I'm sometimes guilty as charged, right? Where you're like, oh, well, I got like 10 more minutes. You know, you kind of put that snack out a little bit further than you really should have. She also focused in, you know, obviously from her cookbooks, some more kind of foods that are antioxidant rich, going to support that recovery as well. I know her favorite superhero muffin during it was the dark chocolate banana superhero muffin. She had those in. I know there was a lot of coconut curry, turmeric sauce. I said it wrong, but I made it a couple weeks ago from her book in there as well. And I know there was a lot of lifestyle things recovery wise, really making sure she was taking advantage of all the tools that she had as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you mentioned nutrient timing and dialing that in for her, like her recovery. So I've been getting this question from my clients a lot, which like, I don't know if I'm missing something as to why this question is coming up again, because I feel like it was like a question from like 2003. And now suddenly in 2022, it's popping up again of the optimal recovery window post-workout. Like in my head, I'm like, didn't we settle this debate in 2003 that it's like, okay, your anabolic window and recovery window is, you know, basically as soon as possible after your workout, but definitely like make sure it's within the hour, at least once you're extending past 60 minutes, you know, your body is basically kind of like, well, you didn't feed me, so I'm going to figure it out in other ways. And that's, you know, where we're losing muscle adaptation and muscle protein synthesis isn't going to be as strong and stuff like that. So I guess I'm asking you as a fellow sports dietitian, like, why is this question popping up again? And is there a change in the research that I'm missing, right? It's the sooner you dial in your recovery, the better.
Yeah. No, I mean, I haven't seen anything that you've missed.
Okay.
That's usually, you know, and I remember when everybody was like, well, it doesn't have to be 30 minutes.
Or 45 minutes, or is it 30 minutes, or is it 45? And I'm like, the sooner the better.
Right? The sooner the better, right?
So when you can. Like if you can't, that's okay. If it's 45 minutes, still eat at 45 minutes. Or if it's 53 minutes, still eat at 53 minutes. But like if you can eat 15 minutes after, eat 15 minutes after.
Yeah. I mean, I always joke and say, if you're ever wondering if you should eat, this is what I tell my clients, the answer is probably yes. So please eat. Okay. But yeah, no. And I also just think too, and I don't know if this was happening with Shalane. I can't, you know, we cannot confirm, but also with that, sometimes that post-workout appetite suppression, right? I see it a lot with my runners. And if we think about with the volume, she was probably training, running, racing, having that play in, and it's in, and I don't ever fault anybody, right? Because there's all these mixed messages about listen to your hunger cues, which I do encourage my clients to listen to their hunger cues, right? But it's more nuanced than just like listen to your hunger cues, or
because your hunger cues might not be there after a marathon, but which is surprising because you would think you just burned all that energy, but it varies. Like if it's really hot out and your stomach's upset, like you don't know.
Oh, I suffer from that. I like after an Ironman, I won't feel hunger until like a day and a half to 2 days after. My body is like, what did you just do? I think, you know, maybe that was in play with her a little bit. Like I said, I can't confirm, but like just seeing, you know, kind of going back to her blood work, which like I said, I have a great article on this if you really want to like dive in from test to test, because I'm like,
we'll link it in the show notes too. If we can.
I'm just like hesitating because I'm like, okay, all of the I'm trying to remember which order all the major marathons were. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. You asked me a few months ago, I could rattle off her numbers off the top of my head.
But I'm sure.
It was amazing to see also just like how quickly she recovered between all of these races. And like I briefly kind of mentioned, I mean, some of that is just, of course, like how well trained she is, right? We would expect to see a highly trained individual recover faster than someone like me. But she really, you know, the nice thing, I mean, obviously, like I mentioned, I work for Inside Tracker. I've been a user since 2016, though, which was a couple years before I started working for Inside Tracker. But just, you know, also having the big picture of her blood work between each of the races, right? Like, of course, we would expect her to have some inflammation, but we were also going over and being like, all right, B12 was a little bit low when we started. And we started supplementation and then it went too high. So it shows, and obviously it's not realistic for someone to, you know, have this many blood tests in this short of time, but it also allowed us to adapt and adjust. And, you know, it was nice to work with someone who understands that these things are flexible and we pick a starting point with the information we have, and each of our bodies are different as to like which interventions we're going to respond best to, and just kind of adjusting, you know, stopping the supplement and going full on with food, even more so the food approach, was kind of where she hit her sweet spot with the B12 for the rest of Project Eclipse. But she also knows that, you know, as she retests on a less frequent schedule, that, you know, the supplement might have to come back in the picture, or, you know, she can continue to address it with food first. So just having that flexibility, but also looking at things like magnesium and red blood cell magnesium, of course, so important with muscle function, recovery, some immune system health, like keeping vitamin D in check. So really getting that holistic whole picture rather than being reactive as she went through Project Eclipse. We were checking those boxes the whole time, addressing the major items, but also making sure other things were staying in check as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to do that many blood tests. You did it 3 days after every marathon throughout those six weeks.
Yeah. We had a baseline test after she got back from the Olympics, coaching the Olympics in Tokyo.
This might be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. I always get nervous, like giving blood or getting blood drawn before a big athletic event, because that's a lot of blood. Like, but that didn't affect her red blood cell count or her iron or anything. Okay.
No, there was like some shifts in ferritin, but it wasn't anything like super drastic because, oh, I should know this off the top of my head how many vials it is, but it's only like 3 to 4 vials, you know? So it's not that much. You know, it's not like when I go to my rheumatologist and get like 14 vials and we always wonder why my ferritin is low. And I was like, maybe.
Maybe because we're taking 14 vials of blood every time. Yeah. So it's, yeah. So to do the Inside Tracker blood work that many times throughout the 6 weeks wasn't enough to make her, you know, blood loss that made any impact on her health.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, of course, that was one of the things that I talked to her about when we were planning it out, because somebody was like, oh, well, it would be awesome if we had like all these tests. And I was like, well, why don't we ask Shalane first if she wants her blood?
She's still competing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously she was great and wonderful and like super excited to see the data too. And, you know, how, and just one more thing while we're on the topic of, you know, she knew even before we saw the blood, just how she was feeling, that her blood work was going to be so much better after Chicago, Boston than it was Berlin, London, just because she's like, she goes, I felt awesome in those two marathons compared to how she felt in Berlin and London. I know London was a big challenge for her. So it's just so interesting. And a lot of people, like, again, it's one of those very nuanced things, like listen to your body and, you know, like, sometimes,
when you're in tune with it, you know, you do have to be good at that. But you, yeah, I would imagine Shalane is, you know.
Yeah. So she knew, and we got the blood work back. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. She's like, oh, I expected this. I was like, of course.
Because she felt better and she made those changes, like you said, of a few more anti-inflammatory foods and recipes and dialing in her nutrient timing, her recovery. That's really cool. So I guess just while we're on the topic of like blood biomarker testing and stuff. Can you share with our listeners a bit about your work with Inside Tracker? I've had John on the podcast, I think, oh gosh, it was like episode number, oh, I forget. So I'll just link it in the show notes, but I had him on the podcast last year. He is, oh my gosh, now I'm going to get his title wrong. Sales.
Oh, he just got a promotion.
Oh, good. Oh, good for him.
He's awesome. And I don't know if I remember his correct title, but I believe it is senior sales.
Like manager?
Manager, I think. I was just very excited because we had a lot of great promotions from a lot of great people on our team. So I was doing all the party emojis. I forget the technical stuff, but very well deserved for him. He works very hard.
Yeah. So I've had John, our senior sales representative of Inside Tracker. I might be getting his title somewhat wrong here, but I've had him on the podcast last year, and I'll link it in the show notes for anybody interested. And so he spoke about, you know, what Inside Tracker is and stuff. So it's a blood biomarker company that anybody can do across the country. If you're interested in knowing some of your blood work and maybe your doctor, you know, you just don't have a good relationship with your doctor isn't ordering these tests, or you're having insurance issues, things like that. Like, you can sign up for Inside Tracker right now online and head over to a Quest lab and get your blood work done. And what's really cool, now I'm speaking about it, not you, Stevie, but what's really cool about Inside Tracker is, you know, yes, it's blood work to understand your health, but more so really great for athletes because we're taking some markers like of inflammation and things like that, that can be more geared towards what an athlete might want to know. And you kind of look at not just are you healthy, but are you optimized for your athletic needs? So I'd love to hear, Stevie, more from you and just how, you know, you got involved with Inside Tracker and maybe what some of your favorite things about working with them and why blood biomarker testing is so cool to you.
Yeah. So, wow. So many things I could say on this. I feel like it could be a whole episode, but.
Yeah, because that was a long question.
No, it's okay. So let's see. So like I said, I've been a user for almost 6 full years now. I actually met Jonathan on Twitter. We're friends years before we ever met in real life. And I just became a believer from using it. And I was really in the heat of my Ironman training at that point in endurance racing. So for me, it kind of became one of those non-negotiable things that I checked in every couple of years, especially when I was racing 2 full Ironmans in a season. You know, the season is not that long. So it was two 140.6 mile races within a couple months of each other. But to rewind a little bit, my work at Inside Tracker, so I'm a team dietitian and consultant contractor, so not a full-time employee, obviously, as I own my business. And it's just been amazing. I mean, the company is great. You know, as our CEO says, we're a community at Inside Tracker. Our company is growing really fast, but it's just so inspiring to work around so many smart and skilled individuals in what they do. And of course, our, like, you know, immediately people will think of the science team, and our science team is incredible and they're super smart. But you even look at our marketing team, our sales team, you know, like everyone is just bring something to the table. And I've learned so much just working, you know, with the team. I mostly work with the content and marketing team versus behind the scenes on science stuff. So my biggest role would be writing. You'll see a number of articles on the Inside Guide at insidetracker.com that I've written about a number of topics, but even that in and of itself, it's been great to dive into to research and writing and be able to kind of, you know, kind of as we talked about our nutrient timing debate, like go through the research and put it in a way that's very digestible and easy for people to read and understand. And with the content team at Inside Tracker, that's one of our big goals, is to take science, good science, not cherry pick science like Game Changers. I'll just throw that Netflix entry out there. Take that great science that our team, I mean, our science team has reviewed over 37,000 peer-reviewed papers to come up with the recommendations in the information within the Inside Tracker platform. So, you know, it's nice to take, you know, some of their work. I just did a couple articles on heart rate. And I just love the team effort, because I can be like to the science team, like, hey, like, what have you pulled on this? Can I kind of see what you have and then go from there? And I can take their hard work and help even more people. So it's just a big team effort. I've learned a lot from the other writers, you know, just to really hone in my writing skills to be a better communicator. And we're just always looking out for each other. And we all just believe so much in the product, even, you know, the non-athletes on the team, you know, people are looking for longevity, healthy aging, and just to live a better, more fulfilled life. So it's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. So I love that you're taking peer-reviewed literature and science, looking at it all, and then being able to write it and put out some articles and content for the everyday person who's just trying to take care of themselves. And that science is hard to interpret. And like you said, too, there's a lot of nutrition information that's cherry-picked for an Instagram post or for, you know, a for-profit Netflix documentary type thing. And so you guys are a company that is really dedicated to the science. And yeah, awesome. So do you use Insight Tracker on your personal clients that you work with in your own business too?
I do. Yeah. I find like, you know, it's just such a helpful tool. And, you know, like I said, being a user and believing in it, and it kind of helping me reach my goals, even as my goals have changed, that it's just such a great tool to really just take a closer look. You know, obviously we can start with some of the low hanging fruit. Like, are we eating enough in general, right? Are we sleeping? Are we hydrating? And then kind of, you know, laying that foundation and then, you know, taking a deeper dive, like, okay, like, you know, we've got the intake up, right? So maybe there is another deficiency. Maybe there is something we want to take a closer look at, depending on each athlete and each individual, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I use it on a lot of my clients as well. So I think just having blood biomarkers, and kind of like you mentioned before, like just taking it once is just a snapshot. You need to understand that the body is fluid, things are changing all the time, it's reactive. And so kind of having that one snapshot, but then also, you know, following up and figuring out, is this during season, after a marathon, you know, are you making changes? And I think that's actually, you know, you're a dietitian on their team, because it's not just what's your blood work, it's how can you improve your blood work? What are the changes, the nutrition and lifestyle changes that you might need to make in order to see these changes? And I love your example with Shalane and Project Eclipse of like after marathons 1 and 2, she made changes and saw those results for marathon numbers 3 and 4. So that was really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super fun. Love geeking out on it.
Well, awesome, Stevie. Well, this has been really fun chatting with you, and I'm sure we could chat about a lot more. We might have to just have you come back on for another episode in the future. I always end every podcast with some just more fun. Well, I think they've all been fun questions, but we've just got a few more fun questions if you're ready to play along. Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay, Stevie, if there is one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Either pizza or Reese's.
Maybe even together.
That's true. But I'll stick with pizza. We'll go with pizza first.
Great choice. Yeah. Never get sick of pizza.
Never.
Stevie, what's your favorite sport to participate in yourself?
Right now, it's definitely running.
Yeah. Are you still doing the Ironmans or just, yeah? Everything.
No, I've retired from Ironman since I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of,
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. That, you know, that was another thing I really wanted to talk about on this episode, was that diagnosis and how you manage things nutritionally and stuff. But I was saying we might have to have you come on.
We'll save part two.
Yeah. We'll save that for part two. So, but you're still running.
Running. And I am training for a 10K open water swim this summer.
Amazing. So retired from the Ironmans, you got some amazing experiences for years, but running, you're still able to do and manage rheumatoid arthritis and still bringing you lots of joy.
Yes. Looks different, but it's still, you know, always nice to get outside and move for sure.
Awesome. How about as a spectator? What's your favorite sport to watch and be a fan of?
I would have to say running a triathlon, any of those races. You know, they're so special to me, but basically I love spectating almost as much as I love racing. So I will be your hype girl and my dog will join too.
Yes. This is when podcasts really miss like the facial reactions. Cause when I asked you that question, you had a great facial reaction. Like,
it's so hard. I just have so much fun. going out yeah. and spectating. It's just, it's great.
A true endurance athlete enthusiast all yes. around. Yeah. Love that. All right, CV. And then if there is a female athlete that you want to give a shout out to for just being a role model, being really inspirational, or what at Rise of Nutrition we call being fierce, fit, and fueled, who would that be and why? It could be somebody famous or just someone in your personal life.
Oh, man. Well, I feel like we already talked a lot about Shalane. I might have to shout out Shalane on that.
And yeah.
just because, I don't know, maybe it's because I got to talk to her and interact with her a lot more, but just her sharing kind of everything she went through the pandemic, you know, the struggles with her mental health, you know, after her knee surgeries and everything, and very different from my rheumatoid arthritis, but it just kind of hit a personal note to just kind of see her go out and like have fun and have big goals, but just also take this approach and really work to empower other female athletes with it as well.
Yeah, I love that. No, we can give all the shout outs to Shalane. I'm a big Shalane fan too. So
I was just like, oh yeah, yeah. It was super, super inspiring for me this year for sure.
Yeah. That's awesome that you got to work with her too. And I also feel like just having two dietitians on a nutrition podcast right now, I want to give a shout out to her cookbooks, because a lot of people ask me like, are they good cookbooks? Should we follow that? Are they, you know, and so I say yes. What do you say?
Oh, 100%. I sent all my clients Rise and Run as a Christmas gift.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love them. I made four or five recipes from spanning all three of them this weekend. And I've made every kind of superhero muffin except for the rhubarb one, because it's not in season yet, but yeah, no, they're definitely a great tool for athletes to have in their toolbox for sure.
That's awesome. Well, CV, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your story, your nutrition philosophies, your running experiences, all of that. We appreciate your insight. And like I said, I feel like we might have to have a part two at some time. But yeah, so where can our listeners connect with you or follow you if they would like to learn more from you or get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can follow me on Instagram at Stevie Lindland. I will warn you, you must love my dog. the majority is dog posts and some of our adventures together, but we have some food sprinkled in. If you want to learn more about me and my business, you can go to StevieLynnRD.com. But yeah, those are the best two places to find us on the internet.
Amazing. Well, thank you again. This has been fun.
Yeah, thanks so much.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/redS and download the Red S Recovery Race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by, and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/redS. That's /REDS. And you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.